and welcome to Quantum Street. My name is Yael Potter, and I can't wait for our conversation. Our guest today is Jordi Visser, a macro researcher, former management director at Morgan Stanley, and also a former president and CIO of Weiss Multi-Strategy Advisors. So I always like to start with background on my guest. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your career path and how you got to where you are today?
Sure. I started right out of college at Morgan Stanley in the part of the firm where I was part of risk management and the controllers area with inside derivatives. And I was there for about 2 years. Then I moved to the trading desk and was involved in swaps in Asia. And then by the end of 1994, I took over the Mexican trading book for equity derivatives and spent most of the 90s in emerging markets. I moved to Brazil in 1997 and opened an office for the firm in São Paulo. Was there for 2 years and got poached to come back to New York and take over the S&P options book. I did that for a couple of years, ran the ETF business, and then I left, started my own macro hedge fund. I brought it into Weiss in 2005, and I was there until 2024 last year. And now I am spending my time solely on artificial intelligence, creating content around it and around how the economy will be shifting forever in a world that has gone exponential.
So, is there something that struck you about your old job that was not working for you, or you just thought this was a new era and you wanted to explore that?
Oh, deep question. I was done managing people and working for investors. The industry and trying to make money and competing against computers is it's not going to work.
Right.
So to me, it was much easier for me to manage my own money. I'm a big proponent and believer in Bitcoin. And that's where the majority of my net worth has eventually moved to over time. And I figured it would be better to try and help hedge funds and asset managers and pension funds and endowments deal with a world that I didn't think they'd be able to understand, because artificial intelligence is not only the most powerful, innovative disruption that's come along, it doesn't really have a sector. It'll be integrated into all parts of the economy. So rather than manage people and kind of spend time trying to compete with computers in managing money, I decided it was better to explain to people how they could make their businesses more efficient and how they could start to understand the way that economics is going to change going forward.
Yeah. I mean, it's super interesting you say that actually, because I had my first guest actually said the exact same thing. His name is Bilal Hafiz, and he's also an economist, and he left his corporate job in finance to pursue exactly what you're doing right now. So I think that's striking a lot of people the same way. So you did touch on your interest in Bitcoin. So due to the new pro-Bitcoin admin, where do you see its future? And especially in the past couple of days, where do you see current events shifting its performance? And what's your price target?
So Bitcoin is to me is the purest artificial intelligence trade, and the reason is because artificial intelligence will effectively disrupt all other businesses that are built on code. And over the last 17 years, the theme that has dominated investments around the globe has been code, meaning building things in software and actually having things work solely based on people being able to build code. Well, now artificial intelligence is quickly becoming the best coder in the world, so it's commoditizing that. And along the way, there will be a massive disruption, which has already started, where companies that were built on code will now have a disruptive force. So if you came up with a great idea for a hamburger restaurant and you started a hamburger restaurant, and then all of a sudden there were 10 million hamburger restaurants, doesn't matter how good your restaurant is, it's very hard to compete when it's been completely commoditized. And so we're entering a very different world where that's going to happen. And the reason Bitcoin fits in is because Bitcoin is the thing that solved the ability to have money with inside the digital economy to transact in that. And that becomes very important as the disruption goes. You're going to have competition from entrepreneurs all over the world. They'll be exchanging content from Brazil and from Nigeria. They'll be building their own websites. And that money is going to be stored. Since I lived in Brazil, anyone who makes $1,000 in those countries I mentioned, that's a lot of money for them, even if it's over the course of a year. And they don't trust their banks, they don't trust their governments, and they don't trust their currencies. So that money gets deposited with inside this bank of the digital economy, which is Bitcoin. So that's the way it fits from a digital perspective. And then this week, Bitcoin has outperformed the stock market by 12%. It has outperformed significantly against technology stocks as of today. The last 2 days, while the market was in panic, Bitcoin, as of right now, is unchanged over the 2 days. And the reason is, and the theme that I'm starting to talk about, which I talked about on my podcast this morning, was people are starting to realize that tariffs and what is happening with global trade is the system is failing, it's breaking down. And every time the system starts to break down, Bitcoin starts to do well. It was created in the Great Financial Crisis when it was breaking down. It did extremely well post-COVID when the world was breaking down. And now we have global trade, which, regardless of what happens, has broken down. So Bitcoin wins on all of these things, and it will just continue to outperform technology stocks due to AI. And as the globe brings in the other 7 billion people that have not participated in capitalism, they will store their money in Bitcoin.
I'm actually writing a research paper right now on the gold standard and how that affected political divisions. And it's really interesting to see that. I honestly think that the gold standard and Bitcoin are similar in a lot of ways. I mean, you can't inflate it, it keeps the currency stable, and it's really interesting to see your thoughts on that. So actually shifting a little bit into tariffs, do you think Trump really knows what he's doing here? Do you believe in this process of tariffs, and eventually do you think it's going to work?
So, on the first part, do I think he knows what he's doing? I think he has a plan, which he's made very clear. He hasn't deviated from it. So, it comes from a paper written by someone in his cabinet named Stephen Miron. He wrote it in November. It was called, I don't remember exactly, but basically something about the global trade restructuring. And within that paper, he talked about the fact that on the one side, you have to have tariffs, and on the other side, you need to have tax cuts and things to stimulate the economy. They're doing all the things at this point, or trying to do all the things that were in there. So I think, A, he knows what he's trying to accomplish. I don't think what's happened in the stock market matters in the long run, other than it gets people scared, wealthy people. People that drive trucks don't even know what's happening to it, so they don't really care, and that's his base. So he's always going to have 40% of the population that's going to be like raising their hands and happy. I do think this is all part of a negotiation. The tariffs are real, they are going to be part of the policy, and there is justification, no matter what people think, that there shouldn't be tariffs in other countries. This has gone on too long, and the US is in a situation where we just don't have the ability to sustain our debt and the deficit. So I think they're going to stick. I think he's going to negotiate. And I think by the time we get into July, people are going to be a little bit angry that they worried so much about what was going on. So
And do you think now is the right time to buy the dip, or is it a little too risky?
if you would have asked me yesterday, I would have said we're not there yet. But as of today, I think we're there now. So we might be able to go a little bit lower at some point. We've built in, the stock. I have my own models for the stock market, and now we've built in a 50% chance with today's lows of there being a recession. There's not going to be a recession if he negotiates the tariffs down to half of what he announced on Wednesday, which I think he will. So now it's just a question of how long it takes for him to negotiate that down. If long as he does, it's not going to matter, meaning it'll still hit the economy a little bit, but the stock market has discounted a 50% chance that he keeps them on and doesn't change anything. And They might build in a 75% chance. If that happens, it'll have to go down another about 7%, but I don't think that's going to happen. So I've told people today that are family and friends, if you were thinking about buying this year, this is the time to be doing it. So.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was going to ask which industry you see being hit the hardest, but it seems like you think that long term this isn't really going to be a big deal.
Well, if that's only because I don't think he's going to keep these on. It is a major deal if he just leaves them on.
Right.
There's two ways for this to go. You're a little too young for remembering Lehman Brothers, but you've heard about Lehman Brothers.
I've heard about Lehman.
So Lehman Brothers' major thing was the government chose to let them go under, thinking that they could handle the situation when Lehman Brothers went under. The problem is the world is interconnected way far more than anyone fully recognizes. And it's not a simple thing where you can just cut the cord and you can move on. So if he wants to keep these on, we're going to have a serious recession in the country and we're going to have to rebuild our way out of it. And that means we're going to lose, over a million jobs. The stock market's going to go down 70, 80%. And that's not what he wants. He has talked in his plan about Scott Bessent in particular, 333, which means he wants 3% growth. He wants a 3% deficit, and he wants to be able to drill for 3 million barrels of oil. Well, oil's now down at $60. The US can't drill with the price down there. 3% growth is not going to happen if you have a serious recession that takes 3 years to get out of. And the deficit will not be at 3% if the economy goes into a recession. So I have full certainty that this is not intended to take the economy into a recession. So there are sectors like technology and retail which suffer the most. They suffer the most for two reasons. Your iPhone, 90% of it is made in China. So if you want to see a $1,000 iPhone anymore, you need it to be made in China. If not, it's going to cost many thousands of dollars to buy, which people don't have. So Apple's earnings would collapse and they'd be in trouble just because their earnings would come down. This would be across the board, Target, Walmart, Kohl's, all these stores. Most of where they get their stuff is from China. So when you say tariffs of 60%, that can't be what you mean because that would immediately lead to job losses, and he doesn't want to do that. So.
So, what are your thoughts on China? I mean, I know it's viewed as a national security issue and you want to protect the country against China, but if that's our main manufacturer for a lot of our products, then how do you see that working out? And what are your thoughts on Trump's stance on that?
So from 2007 until 2014, I spent about a month of the year in China traveling through the cities. And this was so I could understand the culture and see the country that was contributing the most to growth. The reason I stopped going in 2014, that was January of 14, was the last time I went, was because what I wanted to do at that point was spend the time in Silicon Valley and see what was really driving growth. China has effectively seen their economy peak. They ran into trouble with COVID because they haven't been able to get their locals to spend the way they had in the past. And they have a huge demographic issue. So, in terms of China, we've been basically reshoring and starting to move away from China. Really, since 2016, most people don't realize this, but Hillary Clinton was running on very similar policies regarding China in 2016 when she lost to Donald Trump. So trade has been an issue. The hollowing out of the middle class has been an issue. The distribution of wealth problem has been a big issue in the US. So rather than try to adjust the whole trade issue in 1 year, which is what Donald Trump has basically said, that'll just end it. There'll be a total collapse and you'll have to do trading from other places. So I think this is part of a process that's been ongoing and it'll end up breaking apart. The two countries will just continue to find equal footing, but will become less dependent on each other over the next 5 years.
Okay, yeah. So back to the market. I know we touched on this a little bit, but how should we really be assessing risk more so or less so? And I know the philosophy is to buy when it's generally down. And I think we touched on this before, but do you see it going a lot lower?
So in terms of the first part of it, risk, I'll start with you as an example. You're young. There's your risk. You have plenty of time for the market to go lower. So if you buy it a little too early, it's all good. So if you're a trader, you know, it's a different situation. But when you're an investor, I bought some stuff today because I was very happy. I don't care if it goes below where I bought it. I'll buy more because I went into this with a lot more money in money markets. And Bitcoin is my primary thing. Bitcoin's not down, but most of the money I said I have is in some way, shape, or form invested in Bitcoin or something related to it. So for people that are looking from a risk management basis, when you get a 20% correction in stocks this quickly, which is effectively where we are now, you know, or at least close in the S&P, where they're in the technology stocks. Historically, this has always been a good time to start to put your money to work. So I believe that this is a point in time that even if it were to go lower for a month, another 2 months, I don't think we're going to get down more, like I said, than 7% below the lows that were today. And eventually, unless he puts us into a Great Depression, which I don't think he will, we will go back to all-time highs again, which means you're going to rally a lot from here, another 20% from where we are now. So to risk 7%, even if it's a one-year trade, I think we'll get back to the all-time highs by the end of a year from now. I happen to think we'll get there before the end of the year if he does what I think he's going to do on trade. But regardless, that's the way I think of risk, and that's where I think we are today.
Right. So it seems to me like you see Trump playing kind of a poker face here, and you don't think you think he's bluffing, is what I'm getting from you.
No, he's going to get tariffs in, but he's trying to negotiate the best deals he can get. So he asked for a lot on Wednesday and a lot more than what people were expecting. But to be honest with you, it wasn't that much more than what people were expecting. So now that everyone has kind of gone through the details, because, you know, he did his little show, kind of looked like, you know, bringing out the little boards and stuff. And clearly they've been decoded to say that this was done without any kind of real thought. I think it comes out to about $400 billion. $250 billion is where I thought it would come in. So the one thing you have to remember, tariffs were expected. He was elected saying he was going to raise tariffs. Nothing should be a surprise to anyone. It's the amount and the delivery of the communication that is the problem. And all the positive things that he's going to do, he's going to put a very large tax cut through. It's good. He put a tax cut in the first term, and the stock market went up dramatically. And then the next year, he did tariffs, and the market fell. Well, this time he's done them in reverse. He's put the tariffs in first, the market's gone down, and the market's gone down about the same amount as it did at the worst levels that year. So nothing has really changed, Yale. Nothing. I think he told us he was going to do this. I think the market didn't really pay enough attention to what he had said. They didn't believe he was going to do what he said he was going to do. He did exactly what he said he was going to do. But the one thing about Donald Trump that he has in all of his books, he's always said, if he's going to get the best deal, then he has to make everyone feel the pain. And the only thing that happened different in the last 2 days,
I never thought about it
the rest of the world didn't feel the pain until Wednesday, meaning
that way.
the European stock market was up a lot. Well, now it's given back a very, very large percentage of the gains. Everyone's feeling it. Oil's gone down. So every country is starting to feel the effects, and it's very hard for them to be on the other side. I think they all agree that the tariffs are probably a little bit unfair just because they've accrued over time and no one has gone back to negotiate it. So that's what I think he's doing.
So I want to shift into more AI, because and then that's what this is about. So what specifically should we learn about AI? I mean, my parents have been pushing me to learn about AI for months now. They're obsessed with it. So what should we, because I want to be in finance when I'm older, so they're definitely pushing for that. What specifically should we learn about it to gain an edge in the workforce and in the finance industry in particular?
This is the easiest question you've asked me so far. Just to use it. So AI is a tool that understands your words. So you have to use it, and you have to use it the entire day. There's not a single, and your parents may not like me saying this, but there's not a single homework assignment you should do without at least consulting AI, not on the answer, but on after you've done the answer, even if you said, how would you have attacked this problem to see if it would have done it the same way? You should be having a conversation about anything you're curious about. So the voice,
I do that a lot, actually. I
it's
will ask
fantastic.
ChatGPT, this is how I'm feeling. What does it say about me? Just because, why not?
So why don't you do this? The next time there's a book that you wish you had read on finance, and you're like, okay, I'm going to put this on my list to read it. And instead of reading it, go for a walk in the park, put on your AirPods, put on ChatGPT, and go say, I want to have a conversation and learn more about whatever book it is that you want to learn about. And as you're walking around there, as opposed to listening to whatever podcast you were listening to, the Pomp podcast with me, instead of listening to that, go have a conversation about the book that you want to learn about. And that's the way you'll learn better. It's much easier to retain information if you're having an interactive conversation than it is to be in a classroom with the sage on the stage, someone standing up there talking to you, because you'll get bored. If you're walking and you're asking questions that you're interested in. If you ask it to take you through, first start with a summary of the book. Okay, now read me all of the chapters that are in the book. Okay, let's start in chapter three. I'm really interested in this point. Can you give me their viewpoint on this? Okay, could you expand on this point? Okay, what about this? Is there another time in history where someone wrote a book that would take the other side of this? That is what people should be doing with it. Your family should be doing it with you. You should be sitting around the table and talking about the tariffs and actually going through the history of the tariffs and seeing through an interactive conversation with the smartest person you will ever meet. Just go through it. That is the way that you will get better at understanding how to use it. But at the same time, it'll just drive you away from things like Google. It'll drive you away from software. If you go watch and listen to podcasts on how to build apps, you don't need to know how to code. You just need to know how to speak and say, I want to have an app that helps me with my podcast. I want to organize my scripts. I want to do whatever. Please build me that app. And if you go on a thing called Cursor or Replit, it'll do it for you. So.
Right. I mean, I was telling someone this the other day. I really do not remember the last time I had a genuine question and asked Google. I mean, I think we've all become so centered around AI that Google is almost becoming obsolete. And I'm stunned by that. And at my school also, we've had multiple town halls, including the student body, about not using AI and not integrating AI and academic integrity. And I think we should be learning that in school. I think we should be knowing how to use it. I think we should be able to consult AI on assignments, summarizing. I mean, I think it's so important, really.
So the majority of users of AI on a regular basis are below the age of 35. So there's two problems that make it. So first of all, what you said is the obvious answer is it should be that way. People shouldn't be using Google really at all anymore. And the stock reflects it. And there was actually a Barron's article titled, Is Google Going to Be the Next Kodak? And if you go back to what I said at the beginning and why Bitcoin, if Google can be disrupted, they have a dominant market share of about 90% around the globe in search. That's where it stood 3 months ago. ChatGPT has been out for 2 years. So why did it take so long for people to worry or see the Google numbers go down? Because I must be down to about 5 or 10% of my searches are on Google. And the only thing I still do on Google is go look to see what restaurants are open or whatever the case is. I don't use it for information, but it becomes a thing that you must have seen with your parents and you must have seen with your grandparents or anyone else who's older, which is adoption for older people to technology is much more challenging. They stick with what they've used for a long time. They like to read the newspaper. They like to get regular cabs. It took a while to shift to Uber. It took a while to endorse DoorDash. There's just an adoption phase,
Right.
which takes a long time. And I think that's the reason that it's taking longer for it to integrate even into companies and schools, is that the people who run the schools and the people who pay the bills of the schools, the people who run the businesses, they're above the age of 35. So to them, this is just a bunch of hype.
So I understand that you've taken a specific interest in Python for your LinkedIn. So tell us a little bit about that and why it's important for everyone to learn and what specifically you've tried in it.
A friend, when I asked him if I wanted to really be able to use artificial intelligence and build things with it, he recommended I take some courses on Python, not to learn how to code. What's that?
I was planning on doing that. I might take a course on that.
I highly recommend Coursera. That's where I did
I am taking
mine.
a course on Coursera right now.
There you go. It's not important for you to memorize how to code. What's important is for you to understand how to run a script. So think of Python as being able to cook, to read a recipe and be able to understand how you go from that recipe into a finished meal. So a finished meal gets there by a lot of pieces. You're cutting, you're chopping, you're reading a recipe, you're putting in ingredients, you're spicing it up, you're tasting it, you're making sure it's cooked to the proper temperature, and then it's done, and then you eat it. So when you go to a restaurant, or when your parents cook for you at home and you're handed a meal, it's finished. What Python is really about is all the things that go into the application. Now, that means, how do I get to the place where I would type in code? How do I use an editor? How do I run the script? How do I find the script? If I'm running the script, how do I get what I need from it? It literally is all of the tools that you need to understand for cooking, because you don't need to be go to cooking school to learn how to create a really good meal, but you have to understand how the computer works, how much memory you need to run these things, how you can build them. And I think that's what it is just get comfortable with getting into the computer or typing in code, saying to ChatGPT, please code this for me. It'll code it for you. You can bring it into Replit and Cursor in all these places. You can hit run, or you can just go into those places now and say, hey, will you build me this? But you're still going to need to know how to run the script on your computer. And that's what the importance is.
We have a lot of focus on this podcast about the prominence of AI and how that will ultimately change finance industry. So, which sector do you see it having the biggest impact on, whether it's algorithmic trading or investment banking or data analysis? Like, what do you think is the most important?
It's going to impact every single industry. So technology has worked out the most right now, but that's the cloud portion. So I just wrote a big, long paper on the transition away from the cloud and into what I call embodied AI, but let's just say hardware. So for the next 2 years, I believe it will be about humanoids. It'll be about full self-driving. It'll be about AI native phones, AI native computers, having a computer that basically is like an LLM, meaning whatever you load up into your computer, you'll just go into a chat box and say, hey, immediately bring up that photo. Hey, how many photos do I have from wherever? Okay, now what I want you to do is take the data and all the stuff that I've uploaded, write me a paper on this. Basically, your computer will be the ChatGPT. It will learn on it, it will train on it. We're just going into a different phase, but we need more power. So, the one thing I will tell you that is the theme that people will start to realize in the next few years, we don't have enough electricity and power for all of these things happening at once. So the build out, we need data centers, which means we need more chips. We need copper. We need a whole bunch of things that are physical. To write code now takes seconds. To get more copper takes 15 years to get a mine going. To get it out of the ground, you got to go through all the regulations. So everything that's physical in the world is now going to start to be worth more than it was over the last few years. So I'm more focused on AI needs coming through the physical world than I am the virtual world.
What is one book you would recommend for your younger viewers to learn about AR finance, and where can people find you if they want to look you up?
I can't recommend a book. You haven't watched me enough.
Podcast works too.
Okay, I'll use a podcast. Rather than do that, here's what I would say. First of all, people can go to my ex. Yeah, they can go to my ex posts. They can go into my lists, and they can look at the people I follow in AI. X is the best place to get information on artificial intelligence. It will lead you back to YouTube. So, where I've learned everything about how to manipulate LLMs, which ones I have, all of the ones that I do have, I got everything on YouTube or in a podcast, everything. I have not opened a book. I've talked with ChatGPT, so you can do that. But the great thinkers, the Peter Diamandis, the Elon Musk, the Eric Schmidt, I could go on and on with all the people that I try to listen to on a regular basis. But each one of them, I listen to an interview at least once a quarter, because they all talk about what the future is going to look like. There is one called The Next Wave in AI, which I think everyone should listen to. And probably the best advice I can give to every single person, just to stay on top of the changes, aside from X, the fastest way is there's a website called The Neuron, and they post what's happening every single day, what happened each day that was important. And that way you can stay on top of all of the LLMs that are out there, all of the companies that are out there, all of the major changes that have gone on. It's a short read and it's a good way to go. And then, of course, people can just watch my videos and listen to me on Pomp and read all my Substacks. Everything's out there for me too, so.
I actually, now that I think about it, I think I subscribe to a newsletter from the Neuron. That's why I was so familiar.
That's what it is.
Those are actually really helpful too. If you subscribe to newsletters about whatever you want, it automatically forces you to read anything every day. So,
Yep.
yeah. This has been amazing. You were great. Thank you so much for coming on here. And
Anytime, yeah.
yeah. Awesome. So thank you so much and have a nice rest of your day.
You too. Thanks.
Bye.